Good morning. The House Education Committee meeting will come to order. Today is Monday, March 5, 2012. Time is 8:03. President Dar, Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. We have a quorum. Remind everybody about cell phones. And we're going to start this morning with a superintendent presentation by Eric Gephardt, and I promise you we will not have technical difficulties. Eric is with us. For the record, Representative Feige's joined us. Eric from Nenana School District, followed by HB 256, Restoration Intervention, then HB 272, Student Loan Interest Reductions. Will not bring up HB 330, State Education Standards, today. Okay. So, Superintendent Gephardt. Thank you for being here. You know what? Every time I meet superintendents, no matter where I find them, they say, thank you for allowing us to testify before committee. It's really meaningful to them, and it's meaningful to us, too, because you're bringing reality into this room. And without that, I think we'd, even with it, we still need to go out and find the facts. But that is really, really helpful. So if you'd identify yourself for the record and begin the testimony, sir.
Okay. My name is Eric Gephardt. I'm the superintendent of schools of the Nenana City School District. Okay. The Nenana City School District is, we're located in Nenana, which is interior Alaska. If you take the Parks Highway 50 miles south of Fairbanks, you'll come to the first suspension bridge. Look to your left, and there we are. And the middle picture is of the school building, and that blue sign has now been painted black and gold, and you can see it from the bridge. So you don't really, once you get to the bridge, you look to the left, you see the sign, and keep your eye on the road, and one eye on the road, one eye on the sign, and you can get to the school safely. We have three parts of our school district. We have a city school, we have the Nenana Student Living Center, and we have the CyberLinks statewide correspondence program. Our city school, we are able to offer a good majority of core classes. We have an excellent music program. We work in cooperation with our partner, the Denali Borough School District to the south, and we are able to put on concerts together in all the communities, and which allows us to make our bands and our choirs and other things like that even bigger. It's worked well for the district, and it certainly doesn't hurt that that the music directors of each school district are married, so they have a good collaborative relationship there. We have a variety of vocational education programs, and one of the ones that was started through a Alaska Native Education grant that ended a couple years back was our ETT and EMT certifications. We've been able to maintain and sustain that program since the grant was ended through help of the Tanana Valley College in Fairbanks. We used to do a summer bridge class as part of the grant, and then when the grant was up, Tanana Valley College stepped in, and they help us with the summer bridge class where the actual EMP training takes place. We actually have four students at the Nenana Student Living Center who are EMTs, and if we have an emergency at the Living Center, we do make the call, but we also go down and visit a couple of the rooms and get those students out and doing their work. We have a full-service library. It's also our technology center. We're very grateful this year for the iPads for Literacy Project. Our kids in second through sixth grade are loving that, and we're hoping to expand on that into kindergarten through eighth grade. So, very much in support of the committee substitute for House Bill 242, and hope that would allow us to do that. And then we offer dual credit classes in college algebra and college English, which we actually began here in January of this year. We had a visit this summer. Representatives from Western Oregon University passed through Nenana, and as we talked about education, they asked about what they could do to help us, and we just said, well, can we get dual credit classes offered?
Excuse me, Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Now, did you check with Alaska University to see if that could happen?
I have. Yeah, I've been in CAKE for 8 years before that, and I was trying to get it done there, and we have made some contacts there, and it
hasn't worked.
Well, it just hasn't happened.
Okay. Well, and the reason I'm asking is just for the simple reason if our university isn't really bending over backwards to make that happen, then we need to know about it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and we have asked, and we do, it's something that we were very interested in wanting to do, and it's something that I've actually wanted to offer kids. I mean, in my 12th year in the state, and I've wanted to offer it to kids for a long time, and I just haven't been able to get it to happen. And I think they came through in July, and we worked on it during the first semester, and Western Oregon University, and they have a couple of folks. One lives in Wasilla, one that lives in Delta, I believe, and it's being successful, and it's working. And I've looked at the math that the Living Center kids in the class are bringing to the Living Center, and I don't want anything to do with it. So it's good. It's at a high level. Western Oregon made two of our teachers. They went through the process. Two of our teachers are adjuncts with the university. And since they are doing these classes during our regular school day, we were already paying them. So what Western Oregon University did is they reduced the credit to $240 per class. And then as a school district, we're picking up half. So students can get the class for $120. And if they qualify for free or reduced lunch, then we actually cut it in half again, and they can get it for $60. Another thing and these are high school kids, so we're trying to introduce them to college and get them to know what college is like, if that's what their interest is. But the other thing that we're doing to help them ensure that it is the right thing for them, we're actually just now doing the registration process. So they started the class in January. They now know, as we're getting into March, that they will be successful. So when you go to college, you pay up front, and you pay whether you pass or not, and the expectation here is they know what it's going to take to pass, and they've been doing it. We have 10 in the college algebra and 8 or 9 in the college English, and the expectation is it'll be good.
One more question.
Follow up.
So you need to have a teacher that can teach it in the classroom, or is it
right?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Not every teacher in Nenana would be able to teach a college course. We have two teachers with master's degrees, and they are in the areas that would allow them to teach what they teach. We are hoping to expand this. I know our math teacher would like to teach statistics along with the college algebra in the future, because for a college-bound kid, a statistics course is a great foundational course for really most any college course that you take.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So good. All right. And our resources, the most important resources that we have in our schools are the people that are there. We have excellent teachers with low turnover. We have a stable administration, at least in time. I'm in my fourth year. Stability in other ways can be left up for judgments. But the greatest resources we have are the people that we have. We are in a road system, so when we do have an opening, We get lots of applications. We have our principal who had been here for 7 years is leaving at the end of this year, and we advertised the position. In a week and a half, we have 35 applicants. And first cut, I was hoping to get down a little bit further than I did, but there were actually 12 that looked quite solid, and others beyond that that I'm sure were still good, too. Connectivity at the school is real good for us. We were after GCI for a couple of years to increase our bandwidth, and they really weren't be able to, you know, they were having a little bit of trouble getting it done. And but then right across the street from the school, they have a big old box there, and so they actually came to us one summer and they said, we've been having trouble with this, so we are going to run a fiber optic line from that box over there to your school and to your business office. So, and, you know, I mean, we're getting charged on the back end because we're paying for more bandwidth or whatever, but they didn't charge us to run that line in there. And as a school, we have excellent connectivity. Our school buildings are old, built in 1955, 66, 72, and 86, but they are in pretty good condition. I'm hoping that we can either move up the CIP list, or the CIP list can be funded down to the place where we can keep them in good shape so that we don't have to move them off of that list and try for a new school sometime, because I think we can do a lot with the facilities we have. Lastly, I'll speed up the thing here. We have a new Alaska Native Education grant that we were awarded this year for the Nenana STEM Initiative. STEM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. STEM careers fit both college and career interests. They focus on relevance, depth of understanding, application of what is learned, and personally, what I want is I want our kids to love coming to school. I want them to love interacting with their teachers, and I want them to be engaged in brain development activities. And our STEM initiative is helping us with that. We have a project director for this, so that's one of our website spots that's actually kept up better than a lot of the others. And that's our website address there for the STEM initiative if you'd like to check on it later. The Nenana Student Living Center is a place where we can house up to 88 kids from all over Alaska. We actually started this year with 88 kids on the first day of school. That's the first year in the 10 years that we've been able to do that, and we actually had a waiting list. The count day for the Living Center is at the end of the first week of the second quarter. We ended up with 78 students at that time. Our current enrollment is 62, and I've been concerned about the retention at the Living Center since I've been there, and we have improved retention at the center over the course of the past few years, and we're excited about what we see there. As far as activities and programs go, we do have tutoring 5 nights a week, and then additional tutoring is needed. Before the school year started this year, we trained all of our Living Center staff in suicide prevention, which I know has been an interest that I've heard through the legislature. And we had some villages that were particularly hit with that this year, and families in our or students in our Living Center that were from villages or families where that was affected. And we got suicide prevention training for our leadership, our student leadership at the center through the Tananaw Chiefs Conference. And we've had a number, since we had some students trained, we've had other students say that they wanted to be trained, so we're working with TCC to provide more training for our students as well. And then when it talks about jobs down there, our students, some of the students at the Living Center, they have real jobs. They need to apply for them. They need to interview for them. They need to fill out the paperwork for them. If you call the Living Center after business hours, you'll get Nenana Student Living Center student speaking. And they need to be on time. They need to be there. They need to not have their cell phone or their iPods. It's strictly business. They also work in our kitchen, and then we have a student store. And so they have opportunities to work. They are paid, so they earn a minimum wage, a little bit of money for doing that.
Excuse me, Eric. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions on the Living Center. Where do you draw all those kids from? Is it all from just your district, or are they coming from outside your district to attend? And two, how do you supervise the kids that are there?
Okay, the students at the Living Center are all from outside our district. We're a city school, so kids in town live in town. So we have a lot from interior, southwest, places like that. We have a staff at the Living Center. I have two. I am the director, and I actually live there. We need to figure out how to increase our retention rate, and sometimes the direct observance is the best way. But I have a male and a female associate director that run the operation. Then we have resident advisors, and we follow what we call an educational support model, where we help kids. They come for their education. That's I want to make sure our staff is able to support them in that, but then we also need to be able to support them in other ways and do activities and engage them.
Representative Wilson.
You've lost 26 kids this year, which is better than the last 2 years before now. And why are they leaving? You give them the exit exam or exit interview when they leave and find out why?
Yeah. Some students are sent home if they violate the drug or alcohol policy. We actually used to try and work with them. I'm going to get into our student leadership here in a minute, but our student leadership came to us and they said, we know, and if you want to really help us and help us say no, then we need to know that we can't stay if we do it. So we actually made a policy change this year, zero tolerance on alcohol and drugs, and it took a little while to, for people to understand that we were going to follow through with that. And so that was part of it. Again, we got hit with, we had communities and families hit with suicide and a lot of times when that happens, they go home and they'll stay home and yeah. Things. And then there's always just regular homesickness and, mm-hmm. It's not for everybody. Some you come and try and then they go.
Follow up.
When it's suicide, is that within their family or just because it's from their village they want to go back?
Both. We've had both. We've had it some inside the family, and actually we've had some in the, and they don't always stay, sometimes they go back and they come back. Sometimes if we have siblings, for some reason, one will come back, but the other one won't. And,
yeah.
It has to do probably some with the roles that they have in their community or in their family or what their needs are. And every kid's different, and it's certainly quite traumatic for them to go through it. And, and I think that's had a lot to do with, again, their request for help and for training that we've given our staff and that we've given our student leaders.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. We have leadership groups at the Student Living Center where we do leadership training. The UNANA Student Leadership Team's been in existence for quite a while. They have areas of responsibility. They have high qualifications and a lot to do. And they actually added the Justice Circle and the Family Circle to their duties this year. And then one of the things that was noticed is by others in there is that it was really becoming overwhelming because they have to be good in school, they have to be great citizens, they have to do a lot of things, and then as they organize and they do things, there was a void there. So we had another resident advisor at the Living Center create a group called the Unstoppables this year. And the Unstoppables, it's a, like a second layer of leadership. If you're church qualified, I'm a church guy, so I kind of look at it as like you're the leadership team or the elders, and the Unstoppables are the deacons, the ones that just kind of, they really do the work and see that it gets done and different things. It's a different level of leadership. They don't have all the qualifications that they do for the student leadership team, but the leadership team, they get extensive training. They rewrote the handbook, which I think is also helping with the retention rate that we have. And again, it was the student leadership team that came to the administration, and they said, you need to change what you're doing when you're dealing with us with drugs and alcohol. And we listened. And so any changes to the handbook or any changes to policy at the Living Center have to be vetted through the student leadership team. And there are significant requirements to participate. The Nenana Student Living Center, we've had 10 years of graduates, a total of 110 graduates. 11 have completed post-secondary graduations. Not all those are 4 years. I do have the list of all the students, but I'm trying to be as brief as I can. We have 43 that are in post-secondary attendance, 9 in the military, 49 working, and then 21 are unknown or others. In other words, we know where they are, but they're not working. But and some of those are just at home raising kids, which, you know, I mean, you hate to say that that's not work or good work, because I think it is good work.
It's good work.
Things. And then we do have two that are deceased. And finally, our last program is the CyberLinks, and we have a 12-month year-round services that we offer through there, which is we found to be very good for a lot of homeschooling families. It allows them to educate their kids all year round and to spread it out. We have certified special education teachers in all of our offices where we develop IEPs, and we offer direct services. Special education, as you may know, is it's dear to me. It's important to me, and I want to make sure that we want to make sure that there's an opportunity for every student wherever they are, and that they can get the service that they need. So we have regular tutoring and close monitoring of progress, regular study groups, varied curriculum from remedial to advanced, and we also have dual credit offerings from accredited colleges. And since it's there, we do have University of Alaska as well, and others through there. So. And then as part of our CyberLinks program, we do have a graduation completion program. The biggest one that we have is our working relationship that we have with Nine Star in Anchorage, and we began that program, and we see the last 3 years of graduates from the graduation completion program are there. And all of those graduates would be graduates who took more than 4 years to graduate. So we. That. And then finally, the challenges and the needs that we have as a school district. We do need a resolution to the debt, the loan on our Living Center facility, which I visited with many of you about, and appreciate the feedback that I'm getting. And as I stated earlier, we do need more technology tools for direct student classroom use, resources to update and improve all of our curricular areas, major maintenance resources to restore and repair and upgrade our facility and bring it into compliance, and it also facilitates sound educational practices, and then resources to meet the increasing cost of operations, which are our fixed costs, but also our health insurance, our salaries, and everything else that goes into living every day. So.
Ken.
I'm done.
Questions from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. One of the
interesting things we looked at in the iPads and the iPod touches was the Canby, Oregon information that was showing a marked improvement in English language learners and special ed. Have you had those in the school long enough to have any indication as to whether that same kind of jump in engagement and progression towards proficiency is occurring with your iPads?
We've just had them this year. This is our first year of doing it, and we believe so. We have not had a SBA test to give us the data, but our local data, engagement is certainly there. Kids are talking about it with other kids. I had the junior high kids come to my office, and they didn't tell me they wanted iPads for themselves. They said they wanted those iPads from those little kids because they should have them instead of the little kids. And so I was able to coach them that maybe it would be better to just ask for your own and let them keep theirs. But I believe that that we are going to have demonstrated results in other ways too. But formative assessments do indicate that, and there is certainly a high level of involvement and interaction. And when the iPad becomes when it's used as something that you can, once you do this, you can go to that. We're getting a lot of engagement in the other activities that the teachers are assigning that are good as well.
And one
follow-up.
And the structure that you have, are those retained in the classroom, or do the students check them out so that they extend their learning day?
At this point, we are keeping them in the classroom. We would hope at some time in the future to be able to extend the day with it, although we have after-school programs. Our libraries open after school. Our teachers stay after school, and kids can do it that way. But we have just enough for everybody, and we want to, and we do share them with some of the other grades at times, and we just want to make sure that that we have things organized and to the point where if some get taken home and left, that we're not short during the school day as well. So
any other questions, committee? Superintendent Gephardt, thank you. It's good.
Thank you.
Again, oftentimes we just hear a voice over the speaker, and it's really good, and we see the PowerPoint on the wall, but I'm going to break with my agenda here a little bit, and we're really blessed to have many superintendents in the room here. So for the sake of committee, if you don't mind, I know every one of your names, and in a calm moment, I wouldn't choke, and I could name everybody here, but I'm probably going to choke. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd like all the superintendents to just please stand up, identify yourself, who you are, and what school district you represent, and I think we can
start here.
I was thinking of starting with Duncan Ware behind the door.
That works.
Duncan, excuse me. Tell for our sake.
You're going to have to repeat their names so that the secretary can get it on.
Yeah, I've got it. Good. Thank you. Oh, and for the record, too, Representative Pruitt has joined us. Okay, just say your name and which school district you're from.
Duncan Ware, Delta Greeley.
Okay, for the record, Duncan Ware, Delta Greeley. Jim Nygaard, Cordova. Dave Herbert, St. Mary's. I didn't hear that. Steve Bradshaw, Sitka.
Michael Byer, Haynesboro Schools.
Michael Byer, Haynes.
Normack, Northwest Arctic.
John Lamont, Lower Yukon.
Gary Baldwin, Lower Kuskokwim.
Jack Walsh, Bristol Bay. Jack's the one that dared disagree with me the other day. I welcomed his disagreement. Go ahead.
Dave
Piazza, Southwest Region.
Todd Pogue,
Alaska Gateway.
Good morning, Terry Boyd, Yukon Koyukuk.
Terry Boyd, Yukon Koyukuk.
Steve Atwater. It's Steve Atwater, Kenai Peninsula.
Okay.
Bauer.
You're up.
Rob Thomas in Petersburg.
Rob Thomas in Petersburg. Okay, so we're really blessed to have these folks in the room. Maybe we'll have some be able to put faces with names now, but we're fortunate, really fortunate to have them. It's unfortunate that it's such a busy time that they come. It's been pretty frantic around here. I told the superintendents this morning, if anybody tells you 90 days is working, it's not, at least not for this guy. Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll take up HB 256, which is state intervention in schools. Commissioner Hanley and I had a meeting to our meeting Saturday, and two of the three conceptual amendments are the result of the conversation with the commissioner. It's my understanding that with these three amendments, we've taken care of the major concerns that he has with the bill. We did adopt CSHB 256 version X and six amendments in our previous hearing on March 2. Annette, will you explain the amendments as we adopt them for consideration? And Representative Pruitt, will you move amendment number 7?
Now, Mr. Chair, I move conceptual amendment number 7.
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you. Annette, will you please explain Amendment 7?
Mr. Chairman, Annette Kreitz, staff to Representative Alan Dick. Conceptual Amendment number 7 deals with a concern the department had on page 3, really beginning at line 19, 22 through there, that the department shall study the conditions and needs of the public schools, plans, administer, evaluate grants. I'm skipping over, of course, some words to improve school performance and adopt regulations for the improvement of the public schools. And then it goes on to say what those regulations must include. The department is concerned that every regulation then would be subject to all of these requirements that are listed beginning at line 23. And so the conceptual amendment, because we didn't have access to Ledge Legal to have the amendment drafted for this morning, is that the regulations that are adopted under 1407, that's a typo in the amendment, 020A to A through H, must be for the improvement of instruction. That's what the department wanted to be clear about, that all these regulations that are adopted and the inclusion of all of the items from beginning at page 3, line 23, have to be for the improvement of instruction and not apply to every regulation that would that the department might have to promulgate.
Any questions from committee? Do we need time to study that? Okay. Brief at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess on conceptual amendment number 7, you're essentially taking the from line 18 there to line 14 on page 4. Are you summarizing all of those with the conceptual amendment, or are you? I'm not sure exactly what you're trying to change here.
Through the chair, Representative Feige, no. What we're trying to state here is that everything that is included from page 3, line 18 to page 4, line 14, those regulations need to be for the improvement of instruction. There's no replacement of language. It's just clarifying that all of those all of the things that must be included in those regulations are applicable to improvement of instruction. If you look on line 22, or beginning on line 21, adopt regulations for the improvement of the public schools. And so what we're saying is it's not for the improvement of public schools, it's for the improvement of instruction.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I'm confused as well. So are we deleting language? Mm-hmm. Are we adding a new section?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, no, we are not deleting language and we are not adding a new section. What we are doing is clarifying that the regulations that the department must promulgate, including cultural standards, intensive early learning, et cetera, those regulations are for the improvement of instruction and not simply for improvement of the public schools.
Okay.
Representative Wilson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is a conceptual amendment, and the reason it's a conceptual amendment is so that the drafter can probably put a under the department shall, or maybe there would be a, anyway, that he would, whoever the drafter is, would put that in the right place to make sure that all those lines are adopted, and the wording, the regulations adopted under AS, blah, 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 must be the improvement of instruction. That would go in there, okay. And not the rest of it.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
If you're uncomfortable simply making that change to insert the words improvement of instruction on line 22 because we didn't want to have an unintentional consequence.
Okay. Representative Seen.
Ms. Chairman, can you explain to me what the other improvements of public schools are that aren't for the improvement of instruction?
The chair, Representative Seaton, actually the department could, since this is their objection to the language, that someone from the department could explain that. I believe the commissioner is still here.
Sure. Commissioner Hanley, would you want to come and help us explain that?
He's back.
And for the record.
Thank you, Chair Dick. For the record, I'm Mike Hanley, Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. My concern with the language was that all new regulations will incorporate all these functions. We could have a regulation that simply changed a counselor's certificate. And to change a counselor's certificate, or maybe the cut score on work keys. So we change the cut score on work keys, and in that regulation, we would have to include all of these things just to change a cut score. So I had a concern that every regulation from here on out that changed anything in regards to education would be a page long, that it would necessitate that we would incorporate all of these functions, when really that, well, I don't think that was the intent of this language.
Okay. Another question? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this conceptual amendment, where it says the justification here, that really is for the bill drafter, so that they understand exactly what the intentions are when they work in this conceptual amendment.
I think that would be up to the drafter of the bill. So, okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. And then,
Mr. Chairman, through the chair to Representative Wilson's question, that's correct.
Okay, any other further comments from committee? Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I'll remove my objection to the conceptual amendment number 7.
Okay, and any other objection? Okay, with no further objection, amendment number 7 passes. Representative Pruitt, will you move amendment number 8?
Mr. Chair, I move a conceptual amendment number 8.
Okay, thank you, Representative Pruitt.
I'll object for discussion.
Okay. Annette, will you explain the amendment?
Mr. Chair, conceptual amendment number 8 deals with the amount of time that a school or district needed to demonstrate consecutive years of improvement. The department had concerns reducing that time from 3 to 2 consecutive years. And also, so the amendment reinserts 3 years of consecutive improvement, and then also allows the district to choose to receive restoration services for a 4th year. And we recognize that there's a typo in the work draft, and that will be corrected by the draft.
And if I could speak to that. This is, in the conversation with the commissioner, this is pretty important that he just wanted to make sure that a district was really doing well before they were released. My concern was, I think we're providing a tremendous service, and I could see districts wanting to receive, get this benefit, and so there was real I could see districts wanting to get this kind of help, and the idea, my idea was that they could move on after 2 years. But it was very important to the commissioner, and so I thought it would be important to me. So, any further comment?
Mr. Chairman, I forget. What help is coming for those years? Is that grant money and counsel, or is that just... Can you refresh our memory on what that would be?
The plan is in year one that there's an evaluation by an expert to evaluate the school district in regards to the criteria that we described, including students' preparedness to learn. And in that year, the first year, there would be a coach for the superintendent who would be chosen by the superintendent and the department, and a coach for the school board chosen by the school board and the department. Year two would be the superintendent could choose his or her own coach to come in and help, and without department help involved in the decision, and the school board could choose its own coach to help in that process, again without the department. So that would be year two. Then year three is when the team would come in. If there's no improvement, then year three, the team would come in, and the team would describe how, what the steps the district would need to take. Representative Feige.
With all that in mind, Mr. Chairman, on line 13.
Page?
Of page 6. Should we make that a 3 as well?
Through the Chair, Representative Feige, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So are we suggesting we need an amendment to the amendment to also include line 13?
All right, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move an amendment to conceptual amendment 1 to conceptual amendment number 8 to... on line 13 of page 6, change it 2 to 3.
And without objection, amendment number 1 to conceptual amendment number, where am I, 8? Passes. Thank you for your observation, Representative Feige. Okay. Any other comments from committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
The coaches that are in these sections, are those the same 1 week a month coaches as are currently anticipated, or has that changed as well?
Representative Seaton, I wrestled with that question, and I really didn't think we wanted to micromanage that. I thought that could maybe be decided between the department and the superintendent of the department and the school boards.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I've forgotten some of the intricacies of the different versions of the bill. So, and the payment for those coaches comes out of whose budget in this bill?
The Chair, Representative Seaton, judging by the fiscal note, the department.
Okay, thank you. And just a question then, will this significantly change the fiscal note?
Through the Chair, Representative Seaton, there's one minor change in the fiscal note that you have in your packets. But it's minimal. It's a $67,000 change for a section of the bill that was deleted. So it does not, the fiscal note will not be substantially changed from what you currently have in front of you.
Representative Seaton?
Right. I'm just trying to figure out if school districts can now require the department to have them provide coaches for the superintendent for professional development and the school board for a fourth year. It seems that there's going to be, and it seems like that's a unilateral decision by the school district, and especially if these are a choice by the district of having full-time coaches, I just want to make sure that we're not building something in that's saying we are going to have an assistant superintendent paid for by the state, we're going to have a school board counselor or administrator paid for by the state, and professional development for teachers paid for by the state for continual years that are at the option of each school district. So I'm all for improvement. I just want to make sure that we understand the complexities, because if we're not determining in this bill whether it's going to be coaches that we've had currently, which we can define what that amount of money is, but they could be full-time coaches staying in the in that rural district, which could have, I mean, full-time, then that's going to be a totally different fiscal budget than coaches that fly in and sleep basically in the library and for, you know, 3 or 4 days at a time while they're doing kind of professional development. So I guess I'm uncomfortable leaving the definition of what we're talking about so broad that we don't know whether what that fiscal impact is going to be.
Okay. Representative Wilson?
I'm kind of following up with the rest of the bill. Since we changed it to 4-year plan rather than a 3-year plan, there's other places in the bill that were actually stating dates. Like June 1st, we provide the department with for the third school year, we do this. And of course, there's development of a 3-year plan, but it doesn't go in, the rest of the bill doesn't go into the fourth year. Do we need to look at that and see how this, what we're doing here, is going to affect the rest of the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, right now a district may petition the department to continue restoration activities. They already can do that. And we're just saying here that after 3 years of improvement, a district could choose a restoration act. Well, after 3 years of improvement, that a district could choose to continue restoration services for a fourth year. And that's a conversation between the department and the district as to what that might include. The commissioner may want to comment more on that, but that's my understanding from our discussion about this section on Saturday.
Okay. Representative Pruitt, did you have a question?
I did, and maybe we've talked about this before, but what happens when they hit to the fourth year and they're not making it?
Representative Pruitt, my understanding is that the team, once they're formed, the team is made up of the superintendent, a school board member, the four coaches, somebody from the Department of Education, and somebody from the Board of Education, because they also need to be aware of what's going on. They would come up with a plan that would be carried out, in the third year, they would come up with a plan that would be carried out and evaluated. And so I think it would take 3 years for that plan to be to really be able to evaluate whether that plan is having the positive impact or not.
Can I clarify?
Oh, please do.
So we're going to wait. We're going to start the plan after 3 years. After coaching for 3 years, then we'll start the plan.
No, excuse me. There's coaches for 2 years. Year three,
okay.
There's a plan.
Yeah, you're okay.
And then the team comes together and creates the plan. The superintendent carries out that plan.
And it's a 3-year plan, and then, and sorry, Mr. Chair, just to dialogue. It's a 3-year plan, and I don't want to sound too repetitive here, but what happens then if they're not at that at 3 years? We don't want them to be there, but I'm just trying to make sure that we flesh out everything. Do we start over again? Do we go back to the plan again? And secondarily, why don't we start the plan the first year or the second year or earlier on in the process?
Okay. Mm. Representative Pruitt, in my mind, the plan worked. So.
Okay. Okay.
I'm trying not to be overly prescriptive here.
Right.
And I think the idea is, I think for a lot of, when you're in isolation in some of these remote districts, there's a lot of times, again, sometimes it's so close to a problem we don't see it. And I think if just another set of eyes, I think in my mind, if a superintendent could have somebody come in for maybe 5 days beginning of the year and 5 days, maybe 5 days, four times a year, would be all a superintendent would ever need for somebody to come in and say, you know, have you considered this and how's this working? And there's a, in my mind, I could see 20 days of a coach's time on the ground being enough, but a tremendous help to that superintendent and to that school board. You obviously don't want a school board coach on the ground. They're only meeting four times a year. So, of course, they'd only be there during the school board meeting. I was trying not to have to micromanage this.
Just for clarification, during this whole time, there's kids and their education and their future in the balance, and that's why
Absolutely.
I was just making sure, you know, what if we, just to make sure that we've got something in place so that those kids in the end are, we've taken care of them. So that's really all it was, just fleshing that out.
And Representative Wilson, at one point, didn't you suggest that this be evaluated? Isn't that a suggestion you made? Representative Wilson.
I still kind of want to go back to this because on page 8, starting at line 27, and this does have relevance to this amendment. It says, development of a three-year plan by the team established under 2 of this subparagraph to restore the school during the three-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
The team may redirect funding in the district budget to improve instruction. The superintendent shall implement the plan developed by the team, and each year at the end of the school year, the team shall evaluate and adjust the plan as the team determines necessary. And I think that we should think about adding right there that if the two coaches or somebody feels that it's necessary to continue on a fourth year, that it should be worded in there somewhere. That's for the protection of the school. It's for the protection, or it's for guidance for the department, because if not, I just think that in there somewhere we should mention, because we're being very careful to mention what we do at each step of the way. And because we're putting in this fourth year, there should be a mention in here about that fourth year.
Representative Wilson, let me clarify. In my mind, there's 2 years, year one, year two, that had talking to coaches. Year three, the team is formed. The team comes up with a three-year plan, so there's really a five-year plan.
So the
it's 2 years of coaching, warming up to, oops, we need to step in with a team. Year three, the team comes in, and the team develops a three-year plan.
I guess to me, waiting 2 years to come up with a plan is a little...
unless you solve the problem.
It takes quite a while. I mean, why would we wait that long?
Okay, I think there's two answers to that. One is... we already got a massive fiscal note on this thing. It was just inflating the millions. And the other is, I had a good answer for that. Okay, NCLB was 5 years. You know, there was 5 years before somebody stepped in and did something serious. This plan calls on the third year, you know, that was stepping in and coming up with something serious. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to address Representative Wilson's question, my impression is that the coaches, you know, if can identify a problem and hopefully get it resolved right there, and then there's no need to go into the three-year plan. Only if coaching is not successful would you then move in sort of a logical process onto the next step of actually going to the effort of putting together a plan. And on Representative Pruitt's point, it's always a good idea on your instrument approach procedure to have a missed approach procedure. So if you get down to the weeds and the runway is not where you think it is, you should have a way to get out of it. I think on page 6, line 19, I think we've kind of left that door open right there, because if the, you know, if basically it's up to the department to come up with something to cover that eventuality. So I think we've covered it in statute, if you will, in the text of the bill.
Also, if I might, I just got to know Commissioner Hanley has to be over in the at the Senate side here shortly.
You need to deal with the amendment.
Deal with the amendment first. Okay. Are we okay with the with amendment number 8?
Mr. Chairman, I'd remove my objection.
Okay. Any other? No. With no further objection, amendment number 8 passes.
Okay. As amended.
As amended. Commissioner Han- Representative Seaton?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, are you going to have...
The commissioner does have a time constraint, so if you'd want to come and testify, sir.
Thank you, Chair Dick. For the record, I'm Mike Hanley, the commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. I do appreciate the discussion and the time we had to meet. I know that you'll continue to have discussions in regards to this. At this point, the only thing I would say in generalities is that when I look at page 4, and it does exclude the ability to employ a trustee, and I understand the frustration that's been around that. Now, the judge in the Moore case, when she clarified our role and responsibilities to provide oversight and support for districts, she never used the word or the term trustee. That has to be done. What she did say is that it is important for the state, you know, for us as a state, to step in and provide more directive support for schools that are chronically underperforming. And so I would recognize that here there are a lot of steps that move in that direction, steps that we have not taken to date. Right now we've provided coaches and some technical support and a trustee in one district. This broadens that. And it may very well address what the judge had said in regards to more direct support. And I think that although this looks different than what we're doing now, I do think it holds the state, the department accountable, as well as holds some accountability levels to the districts as well. So thank you for the opportunity for me to.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. In your view, on page 8, line 29, where we have the development of the 3-year plan, and included in that plan, not after the plan, but to implement that plan, the team may redirect funding in the district budget to improve instruction. Is that, in your view, the same ability that the legislature is enacting here that is has been used with the or has been available to the trustee, and is that same kind of power and authority that the trustee had?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, yes, it is, and that power has not been given to the trustee. That authority has been given to the department. But before the department intervenes or redirects funds, we must come to the legislature with that suggestion. But yes, this is very similar in that regard into redirecting funds. It doesn't really change the authority than what we already have.
So the department's comfortable with the team as the makeup is in this plan, with the school district, with the coaches, et cetera, being the team to implement the plan. Does the department have a position as to whether the legislature it would be acting in accordance to the previous conditions on the Moore case to activate our authority to improve instruction.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I don't believe that our authority changes here. The makeup of the team, I do believe, like Representative Dick had said, that it is important to have outside influences, outside vision for a district, because a district that has been chronically underperforming for many, many years, the judge had said, has been unwilling or unable to make those corrections on their own. So I do think it's important to have that outside person. An internal team would struggle to see that condition that they're already in. So I do think it's important to continue to have the Department of the State outside influences in regards to that improvement. But I do think that they would still be responsible to, before redirecting funds, to come to the legislature. But I do think it's appropriate. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Wilson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one question for you, Commissioner. Right now, many of your coaches are not from any schools. They're from retired people that used to work in schools. And this Amendment number 9 says the coaches selected by the superintendent and the local school board will be from districts designated as high-performance districts by the department.
Excuse me. Should we introduce it to talk to it? Case?
I think we have two issues going on here. One, the commission needs to leave. Two, the Amendment number 9 speaks to the coach for the school board and not the superintendent.
Not the one in front of us.
Commissioner, how's your time?
That meeting starts now.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask him this before.
Go ahead.
Before
Representative Wilson, go ahead.
Would you like to? Do you understand what the question I'm asking?
Yes, I do. Through the chair, Representative Wilson. I don't fully understand how a coach, as defined here, that would require some extensive time, would be able to be pulled from a high-performing district. So it's difficult to have those two jobs. So I don't know quite how that would work.
Thank you. That's what I was concerned about, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Brief at ease. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
It's not this.
Okay, House Education Committee, welcome back to order, and Representative Pruitt, would you want to move conceptual amendment number 9?
Mr. Chair, I move a conceptual amendment number 9.
Okay.
I'll object for discussion, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and Annette, you want to present that, please?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, this is in the second year of registration activities that the coaches that are selected, by the superintendent and one coach selected by the local school board at the top of page 8. The coach that's selected by the local school board would be a coach from a high performance school district.
And Representative Wilson?
Thank you. And this is what I'm talking about. The coaches don't come, I mean, some of them might come from a school district, but most of the coaches are trained to be a coach, and they are, a lot of them are retired superintendents or retired whoever, and they are contracted out by the department. And so if we are going to start doing it this way, those people would have to be trained, I would think, to work with another school district, and you would have to either pay them and then replace them because they're from a school district that needs that person there. So this is going to make a big difference, especially as we move along and there's going to be more schools that are out of compliance. So, and that's the reason I wanted to ask that from the commissioner, whether that could be, and it would be an added expense that we're asking now, an added expense, and we can't put that on anybody as an unfunded mandate. And so this is important that we figure out how this is going to get funded, and that we're willing as legislators to increase funding at that level, because you won't be picking from the coaches that are already out there. You've decided to pick somebody from a school district that's a high-performing school district, and they may not be a there may be no coaches there. See, you understand what I'm saying?
Perhaps Representative Wilson, let me respond first on page 9, line 3 and 4. It does say subject to appropriation by the legislature. So, okay. Then, but back to your point, the whole intent here, and I'll exaggerate to make a point, is that, say, on the school board that's not performing well, it says I have to get a coach. Well, we want to make sure that coach is drawn. They have total choice as to where they can draw it. They can pick their own coach this time. It doesn't need to be in collaboration with the department. So what if they say, I'm going to pick my buddy down the road or somebody from, you know, my cousin from up the river. So what this is speaking to is the need to have that coach come from a high-performing, somebody who's doing well. They're doing well, and they'll be selected by the local school board so that they have to draw somebody of quality, somebody of expertise. Correct me.
I totally understand that, what you're saying. But what I'm saying is, you can't go into the school district and say, oh, you're doing well, I'm going to take one of your people. Because there may not be a coach in that school system to do that with.
Representative Wilson, help me sort through this. In my mind, the school boards only meet 4 times a year. Maybe for 3 days or 4 days. So if I'm school board A, and I want to draw from your school district D, and you have a great school board, this is saying that I could go in as I need a coach, and you're in school district D, and I could take one of your school board members as a coach for my school district, for my school board, and help us do a better job of being a school board. Representative,
I just want to follow up.
Oh, please.
Are you taking these from the state board or from a school board?
Another school board.
Well, all school boards, as far as I know, meet every single month.
Representative Pruitt?
I see the commissioner has returned. Is he here for a period of time? Is it possible that the question that Representative Wilson was asking and she wanted to address to the commissioner, he might be able to answer that question?
Commissioner, you're willing to testify.
I need to get him a better seat.
Thank you. For the record, Mike Hanley, Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. I'm back. Mm. You might have to let me know what the question was.
Restate it.
Okay. This amendment is saying that we can go, go to one of the high-performing schools, and we want a coach from that high-performing school. Okay, what happens if there's no coach in that high-performing school? I mean, I thought, and I could be wrong here, but my thoughts are that we have certain people that are coaches, and they aren't working currently in a school system right now. They're contracted out by the department, and they're working as coaches. Now, am I right or am I wrong in my thinking?
Representative Wilson, we hire coaches as resources allow, so we don't have coaches necessarily just standing by that aren't working. The only ones that are employed now have specific tasks around
right.
the state. So I would anticipate that this would be, and the fiscal note represents, that this would be an additional coach that would go here. As far as pulling them from a high-performance district, I don't know that there's somebody necessarily there that would be called a coach. The ones that we currently employ, this would be someone in addition to. I think my understanding of the bill is that we would hire another coach for these districts, for these restoration districts, and that we would choose from the pool of current employees in high-performance districts. And that's my understanding.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm unsure of what the school district coach is. It almost appears that we're talking about the elected members of a local school board that's a high-performing district. And, I mean, we can't just take voluntary members that have been elected by a local region that understand their constituent and their region and then say, well, simply because it's a high-performing district in, let's say, Anchorage, that they are the coach that is now going to go to a small single-site rural district or a three-site district or whatever, and are going to be able to coach the school board. I think that this is what it is. They're going to be the coach for the school board and try and make that school board, which hasn't been functioning well, function well. And I guess I'm unsure. Is that the parameter here, that these are members of a local school board that is a high-performing district? Is that the
Representative Seaton, that was the intent. And we can all look at Norm Wooten from Kodiak, who's kind of like the father of school boards, and he goes around and he coaches many of the school boards all over the state of Alaska. He travels considerably, and he just goes in and just helps them do a better job right now. And my thought was if there was somebody comparable to him that could go, that's from a school board that's functioning well, and help coach that school district, school board, into how to be a better board. That was the intent. But I guess my thought is, if this is getting too complicated for folks, we can just dismiss it and move on.
Okay.
Representative Wilson.
So you're not actually getting someone from the school itself. You're getting someone from their school board.
From their school board. Representative Wilson, in my mind, I could picture somebody saying, okay, we got to pick a coach. So, well, who's doing well? And, well, we have, maybe UConn Flats is doing well, or Lower UConn's doing well. I know so-and-so over there. Let's get that person for a coach. But the idea was to make sure that if you're going to draw somebody in to be a coach, that there's somebody that's from a district that's doing well. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we should say that in the amendment then, because right now the amendment says one coach from a high-performing school district shall be selected by the local school board, and that's not what you want.
Okay. Okay. From Representative Wilson, the amendment to the amendment might say one coach from a functioning school board of a high-performance school district. Would that work, Representative Wilson? We say one coach from a functioning school board of a high-performance school district shall be selected by the local school board.
One coach from a high-performance school district board, school board.
From the school board of a...
From one coach from the school board of a high-performance school district shall be selected by the local school board. The intent here is that only that the when we pick, when the school board goes to pick a coach, that the coach is somebody of quality and somebody from a district that is doing well, that have insight, that can come in and help that school board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
And I think that if the intent here is that it's a member of the elected school board, I think that that's what wasn't originally captured in the amendment. So if that's the intent of the amendment, to say it's a school board member from a high-performing district, I think that clarification would help.
Okay. Representative Wilson, you want to offer an amendment to the amendment?
Well, I think we need to. I'm not ready to do that right yet because I don't think I have it down pat yet,
okay,
so that it's proper.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to conceptually amend the conceptual amendment so it would read, one coach who is a school board member from a high-performance district shall be selected by the local school board.
That makes sense.
That sounds better.
Excellent.
Much better. That explains what you really want.
Is there any objection to the amendment? To amendment, conceptual amendment number one of amendment number nine. Hearing no objection, amendment passes. And we can move on. The objection to amendment number nine.
I'll remove my objection to amendment number nine as amended.
Hearing no further objection to amendment number nine. Amendment number nine passes.
As amended.
As amended.
And Mr. Chairman, since there were two placed on the table, I'd just like to read that is to page 8, line 4, and it would read, one coach who is a member of a high-performance school district shall be selected by the local school board. And then there was a justification section that's added, just to clarify which amendment number 9 was.
Okay, is there any further committee discussion on CSHB 256? We've already had the department testify. Commissioner Handley, would you like to comment again? We got peace. Okay. Public testimony on CS 256 now closed. What's the wish of the committee? Representative Pruitt, will you move CS for HB 256 from committee with accompanying fiscal note and individual recommendations?
Mr. Chair, I move CS for HB 256 version X as amended from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes from the Department of Education Early Development and the zero fiscal note from the Department of Administration.
Okay, and hearing no objection, the bill passes in committee, and I'll take a brief email, and that's just everybody's. Final bill is HB 272, student loan interest reductions. Representative Gary, you're here. First off, Representative Pruitt, please move CS for the second sponsor substitute for HB 272 version R, Romeo.
Mr. Chair, I move the CS for second sponsor substitute for House Bill 272-LS1162-R, dated 3-2-4, as our working document.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman? I'd object for discussion of the changes between the versions.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We handed out a memo with the previous version, but basically we've worked with Diane Behrens and members of the committee who had concerns and tried to incorporate all of those concerns into the bill. The latest version makes clear that you don't get – this bill is about ending the brain drain and making it easier for Alaska students to pay their loans. And that applies to Alaska students who leave the state to go to school and come back, or Alaska students who stay here and remain. We wanted to make clear, pursuant to a comment by Representative Seaton, that the interest rate reduction didn't apply until after you completed your course of work. So that's in the R version. We made clear in a previous version that's still in the R version something that Representative Feige raised, which was what is really the residency standard. And the residency standard is as strict as you can do under the U.S. Constitution. It's essentially the permanent fund residency standard, which is you have to be here a year before you can qualify. You can't just move to Alaska and get the lower student loan rate. So those things are now in the R version. And the one other thing that's in the R version was a recommendation by Diane Behrens. She believes she'll have to use less staff if we make the reduction, not a reduction in the interest rate, but in the principal. There's a slight difference in doing it one way or the other, but if we did it as a reduction in the interest rate, she felt she would have to hire additional staff. So we've done it as a reduction in the principal on an annual basis. So you'll be paying 8% a year in interest. Your principal will go down 3%. It's still very similar to having a higher interest rate. Your principal and interest will result in, if you take a $50,000 loan out, you're going to pay back more than $50,000. But she felt that was easier. So those are essentially the changes in version R. And I think we have by now met most of the concerns of the members of the committee and Ms. Behrens. And actually, with all of that, I think the fiscal note's going to be much cheaper. So.
Representative Wilson?
I don't see. Is there someone from? I don't see Ms. Behrens here.
Diane Behrens.
Oh, she's online?
I have that she's online. I don't know whether she wants to testify or just here for questions. Excuse me, Diane Behrens, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Wilson has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, it hasn't been that many years ago that I can remember that we had that actually we were in the red with our loans for our school loans, and you worked very, very hard to get that turned around. And I know that we're doing fine right now, and I just want to make sure. I think this is a good idea. I like it. However, I just want to make sure it's not going to jeopardize the progress that we've made so far. So can you comment on that?
Certainly. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, the approach that's taken in the revised bill is a very careful one. Representative Guerra has ensured that the benefit to residents who qualify is only available if the legislature appropriates the funds. So it removes from the process the corporation has no liability for this benefit, and it is predicated on adequate appropriation. The bill does indicate that if there's not sufficient funds appropriated to give the full reduction of principal, that it would be provided on a pro rata basis. So I think the elements are there to ensure that the consequences of the old forgiveness program do not occur here. The technical change is one of the things with the forgiveness provision that was embedded in the loan is it led young people to borrow money with the assumption that they only had to be able to repay a portion of it. Well, of course, as we know, they have to complete the degree, they have to live in the state, and many, many borrowers failed to do that and were left with a debt that was much greater than they had anticipated repaying. So that really is not the case in the approach that this bill takes.
Representative Seaton.
A follow-up on that?
Oh, excuse me, follow-up. Representative Wilson.
Diane, I would like to. So, in other words, what this bill does is just says that maybe what you desire will happen, because it's so we would have to go back to the legislature every year and find out how many people qualified and whether the legislature is going to pay this, and if times are tight and the legislature decides not to, then these students who thought they were going to get their loans reduced by 3% a year on the principal, that just won't happen.
That's correct. Through the Chair, Representative Wilson.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a couple of things. Diane, do you have the R version?
Through the chair, Representative, I have a T version, which is dated 3/1/12, so I'm not sure what the differences would be between the R version and the T version.
Diane, we just got the R version, Romeo version this morning. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. The main change in the R version is that we make clear that you don't start getting the benefit until your degree is completed. So the previous version had you getting the benefit while you were in school, but you don't get the benefit till it's completed. That'll reduce the fiscal note.
Okay.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I just wanted to, when I was quoting lines, I wanted to make sure you weren't confused. I'll try and detail those back and forth. In the R version, it's page 2, lines 2 through 2 and 3. And then I'm wanting to coordinate that with lines 12 and 13. And I guess in the T version, that's actually those are the same lines. So in those two versions. So would you look at those and let me know how these work together? The lines 2 and 3 say the principal alone is not otherwise eligible to be fully repaid or forgiven by the state under another program. And line 12 and 13 says a reduction of the principal of the loan provided is in addition to any other available reduction of principal. So would you...
Certainly. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, as I understand it, on lines 2 and 3, the sponsor is trying to ensure that if, for instance, the loan is a teacher education loan and it qualifies for loan repayment or loan forgiveness through another state program, this could be, for instance, the WAMI loans, which are not included here, but I think it's just to generally ensure that students can't or borrowers can't double dip. On lines 12 and 13, it's permitting borrowers who might be qualifying for other benefits that the Student Loan Corporation is providing, for instance, if they are using a recurring automated payment and they get a 0.25% discount for that, that they get this in addition to that. So it's to ensure that the fact that they qualify for these other sort of incremental small benefits or credits, that does not preclude them from receiving this reduction of principal.
So follow up, Mr. Chair.
I'll follow up.
So lines 2 and 3 are fully repaid or forgiven means that it's 100% paid off. It's not. If you get 50% of the loan paid off, you could still apply this, but if it's 100% of the loan is already paid off, then this goes away. Is that what that's?
That's what I understand, but I would certainly, if the sponsor's intent is something other than that, to interject.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chairman, could we ask the sponsor on that?
Sure.
Representative Guerra.
Sure. This will all become much more clear once I present the bill, but there are two kinds of discounts you get. One is like the WAMI discount or the rural teacher loan discount, where we fully repay your loan if you meet the conditions. And so we're not going to give you a 3% discount in your loan rate if you're already going to get full repayment. There are minimal reductions that do exist, like if you pay your loans online. That's a 3/4 or that's a 1/4% decrease in your loan repayment. This will be in addition to those. So this will be in addition to those partial discounts that you get. But if you get full loan forgiveness, if you're in one of those programs, you don't get this 3% in addition. It only makes sense.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you.
Representative Seaton.
And while we have Ms. Behrens on the line, on line 4 and 5, the borrower has completed in a timely manner the degree or certificate. A timely manner, is that a term of art, or does that just mean it isn't hanging out there for 20 years? I'm trying to figure out if someone doesn't get a four-year degree and, I mean, get a bachelor's in 4 or 5 years, does that mean this no longer qualifies, or can you fill me in on that term of art or not?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, you'll see, and I thank Stephanie Butler, she's just sent me the new language via email. You'll see in subsection E, there is direction for the commission to adopt regulations that will include a description or a definition of timely completion. I would anticipate that the commission would be inclined to adopt the national standard, which is within 150% of the degree length, so that for a four-year degree, if a student completes that in 6 years, that would be considered timely completion. If they went longer than that, then they would not qualify for the reduction. And similarly, for a two-year degree, if they finish in 3 years, that would be timely completion. But I'm speculating now, because that's a conversation the commission would have in promulgating regulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess basically we're trying to, the intent here is to pay off the people that come back to either live in the state of Alaska or come back to the state of Alaska after getting school outside. The one thing that concerns me is, let's take pilots. Guy goes out, goes to some university in the lower 48 and gets his aviation degree. He comes back to work in the state as a pilot. He's got a loan to pay for this aviation degree. Problem is, we already got plenty of pilots. So why is it in the benefit of the why is it the benefit of the state of Alaska to pay this guy's college, pay the principal back on his loan? We don't really need the skills that he or she is bringing back to the state. Now, why it's great to pay off somebody's loan, and the fact that they are bringing some skills back to the state is possible, but is there a, should we be considering limiting this to particular skills that we actually have a shortage of here in the state? It would reduce the fiscal note, and somebody would have to decide what those skills are, but it seems like much more effective way to spend our money. Otherwise, we end up footing the bill for, 100 people that go get a degree in English literature when we don't need 100 people that with English literature degrees in the state.
Representative Guerra.
Through the chair, and a lot of these questions will be answered if I could actually do a presentation on the bill.
Okay.
Is that okay with the committee?
You do. Please.
Thank you. The bill is aimed at making sure Alaska has a strong workforce, and it's also aimed at making sure that Alaskans who want to come back to the state or stay in the state are able to find jobs. The bill had not occurred to me. For many years, we talked about loan forgiveness. It's too expensive. You cannot forgive everybody's loan. And so I thought, well, what is an alternative? And one day I was walked into my credit union. I found out I could get a 2.5% used car loan, and I've passed this out. It's a 3%, but then with additional discounts at the bank, it goes down to 2.5%. For a used car loan, I can get a 2.5% loan, because inflation in this economy is around 2%, 2.5%. But we have students paying 8% loan rates. That's triple the rate of inflation. If you want to do something to make sure Alaskans don't come back, don't give them a discount for coming back. If you want to make sure that Alaskans do come back and do stay here, let them know that when they graduate school and they have a mortgage and they have a student loan and they have the expenses of starting a family, that they can break even. So the impetus of the loan was this. I have no problem giving somebody a 3% car loan or a 2.5% car loan, but we have to value education just as much in the state. And we have a 38% brain drain in the state. Roughly 38 to 40% of Alaskans who leave Alaska for school don't come back. So in response to Representative Feige's concern, do we really want to bring all these Alaskans home when there are outsiders taking some of these jobs? Yeah, the answer is yes. We do. We would rather have Alaskans come home and fill these jobs. That's good for families. It's good to keep the state as a cohesive state. And it's good as a good way to provide Alaska jobs for Alaskans, for, so people know that they can remain Alaskans. As you can tell with the various committee substitutes, we've tried to meet people's concerns before we came to this hearing. And as you heard from Ms. Behrens, we've tried to meet her concerns before we came to this hearing. And we've tried to limit the fiscal note. But the there are certainly jobs that outsiders can fill in the state. We want Alaskans to fill those jobs. We invest in our Alaska students at the tune of $5,000 to $10,000 to $15,000 a year in grade school. We want that investment to be paid off by trained Alaskans to take Alaska jobs. We don't want a replication of what goes on in the oil industry, where you're sitting next to a guy who says, yeah, I'm coming up to work for 2 weeks and I'm going back home. You'd rather have a situation where you're sitting next to an Alaskan who says, I'm going up to the North Slope, and then I'm moving back to Stony River or Anchorage for my next 2 weeks or Fairbanks for my next 2 weeks. I mean, as a state, we should make sure that we provide opportunities for people in this state. We've tried to shorten the hearing by asking people to submit letters of support instead of testimony, so I don't know if we have anybody online. Let me let you know a few other ways that we've saved money under this bill. If you're in default, you don't get the benefit of the 3% principal reduction while you're in default. That actually will probably end up saving the state money, because somebody's going to look at the situation of going into default and realizing they're going to lose their discount. There's going to be a material impact in reducing the number of people who go into default, because they're going to realize it's going to cost them more if they do that. But when you really sit down and you go back to it, it's in the economy where wages aren't going up, where people are coming out of college at wages and earning wages that are not what they used to be. They cannot afford a loan rate that's triple the rate and quadruple the rate of inflation. So we also give the Student Loan Corporation this benefit. We say, look, if this discount reduces your loan rate below 3%, 3% is an awfully reasonable rate. We don't want to give you anything lower than 3% unless the Student Loan Corporation says that's necessary. So we set a floor. We say the minimum rate should be 3% unless, by regulation, the Student Loan Corporation says a lower rate is justified. But basically, we want loan rates to be much more in line with what a mortgage rate is, what a used car loan rate is, what the rate of inflation is. I'm not blaming the Student Loan Corporation. It's very difficult for them to issue loans. And so they're not rolling in the money by issuing 8% or 7% loans. And that's why the legislature has to cover this cost. There may be years where the Student Loan Corporation makes so much money that they could pay a dividend to the legislature, and that'll help us offset the cost. But in a normal year, the Student Loan Corporation is not making enough money that they can pay for this benefit. So it would be a legislatively paid benefit. And just in case anybody has any questions on the constitutional concerns, we model this very much after the WAMI program, after the teacher loan repayment program. You have to be an Alaskan before you qualify for those things. The Constitution allows us to say you have to be an Alaskan for a year before you qualify for these things. And when you move back, you get the loan discount. And if you don't move back, you don't. So it's a model that's been tried under the WAMI program, under the teacher repayment program, but avoids the pitfall that the Student Loan Corporation faced, which is making them pay for a discount that they don't have the funds for. And like I said, if they do have funds in a particular year, they could pay a dividend to the state, and that'll cut the cost. The goal is to make sure that Alaskans have Alaska jobs and don't have an impediment to move back to the state. It's good for the economy. It's good for families to help keep them together. And we think it's a modest approach instead of going the old approach, which was talking about loan forgiveness every year that we can't afford. So with that, I'm happy to take questions. But the whole purpose of the CSs and the sponsor substitutes was to meet the questions raised by Diane Behrens, to meet the questions that we heard from committee members. So this bill would eat up a lot of committee time.
Appreciate it. I understand we have Maura Smith online. Maura, are you there?
Mr. Chairman.
Stand by. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for procedure, I would withdraw my objection to the adoption of version R as our working document.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, I got that. Thank you. Okay. Moira, if I pronounce your name right, please give your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Moira Smith, and I'm testifying on my own behalf today. I'm honored to have the opportunity to present briefly to the committee, and I'll go through three brief things. First, just a quick background on my education and my debt load. Second, a rundown of some of the perverse economic incentives that actually lead people away from Alaska. And third, my opinion on the value to having Alaskans return. I was born in Anchorage and raised, for the most part, in Juneau. I went to Georgetown and graduated in 1998 from undergraduate, and then took some years off and graduated from law school in 2007. I took out student loans for each term of my undergraduate and law school education. And at this point, I have one undergraduate student loan left, and that is my Alaska student loan. Before I consolidated that loan, I had four separate loans with interest rates ranging from 8 to 9%. Since I consolidated it, the loan's interest rate is 6.25%. And what's interesting about the 6.25% interest rate is that it's higher than all but one of my other student loans. And I paint this broader picture because I know this hearing, of course, only focuses on Alaska student loans, but I think it's important to put those loans in context. I have a total of about $170,000 in student loans, all but the Alaska student loan, which currently has a balance of $17,000 worth for law school. And the interest rates on my many, many student loans range from 2.75% to 6.55%. So as I mentioned, the Alaska student loan is the second highest interest rate among all of my student loans. And the average interest rate on my loans is 4.38%. I want to talk a little bit about the weird incentives economically. I had a choice when I went to law school. I went to a state school, and I could have chosen in-state tuition, which would have saved me thousands of dollars a year. But, of course, I didn't. I chose out-of-state tuition because I knew that I wanted to return to Alaska. Then I had the opportunity, sort of like a lemming, to join all of my law school friends and interview with the large law firms that hired, you know, pretty much all of my law school friends. And I chose not to interview with them, even though the starting salaries at those big law firms for my colleagues and for my friends from law school were $160,000 a year. And I didn't interview for the high-paying jobs because I knew I wanted to return to Alaska. And I'm very fortunate because I work for a relatively, I work for a great firm, and I work for a firm that pays above-market salaries. But I can tell you that the first-year salaries at most Alaska law firms are less than half of the $160,000 a year that the San Francisco and other large city firms pay to their first-year lawyers. So these are the very real economic incentives, the very real choices that would lead Alaskans to stay away. And the unfortunate thing is that there were really no countervailing economic incentives to make a person come back to Alaska. There was nothing to make returning to Alaska economically attractive. And, you know, obviously there are a lot of things that make returning to Alaska attractive in other ways. But from a straight-up economic point of view, there was really nothing to bring me home. And the last thing I just wanted to touch on is it is my opinion that it is worthwhile to have Alaskans come home. Some of my closest friends are Alaskans by choice. And I think Alaska absolutely benefits from having these sort of transplants come up here. But I also think there are real benefits to having Alaskan kids come home. Representative Guerra mentioned the benefit to family. I can tell you that my daughter's time with her grandparents is invaluable, and it would happen a lot less if we lived in San Francisco. I think it is a good idea to reverse some of the brain drain. And I guess I just end by mentioning that because Alaska doesn't have a lot of the professional schools that exist down south, Alaskans have to leave anyway to get some of those higher degrees. And so this is a way to make sure there are economic incentives to have them come home. Thank you.
Thank you, Moira. Any questions from committee? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At any point in your educational decision-making process, were you forced to make any of those decisions, or were they all decisions you freely made on your own?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, they were all decisions I made on my own, and please don't misunderstand my testimony to be whining, for lack of a better word. I mean, I have made these decisions, and I am current with all of my student loans. I pay them back in good faith, and I am not here to complain about the economic burdens that I took on. Instead, I'm just here to reiterate that there's a way to incentivize returning to Alaska, even for lawyers, which I understand is probably not a profession that anybody thinks we need more of, but in any event.
Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Feige.
What kind of law do you practice?
Primarily oil and gas.
We need those.
Okay. Any other questions from committee? Representative Garrett, this looks like a good bill, but I think there's some hesitation because we got the CS this morning and we don't have a current fiscal note. But I promise we'll schedule this one real quick. And Representative Seaton.
Are we going to do a committee discussion? Or
I thought we were discussing.
Oh, I thought we were in public testimony. So, but that's fine.
Oh, public testimony closed. Committee discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the discussion on the qualifications and what was the intention on the bill. I just want to state for the committee that, you know, we can consider everything we do is only a jobs bill and only looking for certain kind of jobs, but I'm also the legislative member from the House who is the WICHE, Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education representative, and which is all the Western states. And one of the things that we've got a problem with in Alaska is that our level of education has deteriorated over the years. We used to be one of the highest educated states in the nation, with the most number of graduates. We are now way down on that list, and that makes us very unattractive for many industries to come to Alaska because our level of education in this state has deteriorated. And so one of the things that employers look at if they're going to try to get some, whether it's new mining, whether it's new industry, or some kind of manufacturing, some kind of software development, anything new coming to looking for a place to go, one of the basic things they look at is what does the level of education of the job force in the region, and we are suffering greatly from that general decline in the level of education. And I could bring the statistics and all to the committee and at the next hearing. Maybe we should do that because that is what I think that this bill is seeking to reverse and to enhance Alaska's competitiveness in the world for new industries to and new employers to come and have jobs here. So I kind of caution us as we consider this to say, oh, well, we only want to enhance specific people to come here for specific jobs because a highly educated citizenry is really important in many ways to our our entire state. And so I will bring that information to the committee next time, since that seems to be one of the basis of what is this bill for. But I think that the purpose of the bill should be to look at retaining and bringing back
highly educated people that will contribute to our communities, whether they're taking a particular job or not. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate everybody's patience. Sometimes it's hard to bail a boat and paddle at the same time, and I got things out of sequence, so I appreciate your helping me get that flow correct. Any comment?
Mr. Chair, can I add one? There are two things that I forgot to add. First of all, as we all know, Alaska ranks last place in the nation in terms of college attendance and college completion. Part of that has to do with finances. I mean, the marginal benefit of a college degree sometimes in terms of salary might not be worth it. And this will have some impact on trying to get us out of that last place. We don't want to be in that last place anymore in terms of college attendance and college completion. And the other thing that's good for the economy is that when you have Alaskans who move back here after college, the money stays in this economy, and it circulates in this economy, and it's good for other businesses in this economy. And so when you encourage people to come back here, not only for all the other good benefits, but when you encourage people to come back here so that they spend their money in the Alaska economy, that's a good thing for us. The money ripples through the economy, and it makes us a stronger state that way as well. So let's get out of last place in terms of college attendance. That's going to take a few things for us to do. Sometimes there are schools in the lower 48 that people aren't that benefit a student better than a school that we have here. And just the last thing, the University of Alaska spends about twice as much on a student as a student who pays full tuition. It costs us money every single time we send somebody to the University of Alaska. It'll actually be cheaper to send somebody to the lower 48 for school, let them choose to go to the school of their choice, give them a 3% reduction. That'll save us more money than sending them to the University of Alaska if that's the choice school that they want to go to. It's an odd concept, but it'll save us money.
You've obviously thought about this at 2, 3 in the morning. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little competition would probably spur the University of Alaska to be more competitive, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Two things I think I take issue with. The analogy of an 8% loan versus a 2 or 3% car loan. Interest rates typically are set commensurate with the risk on the loan. Higher rate loans are typically riskier for the bank to offer. And I mean, I look at a car loan, if I'm the bank and I loan money for the car, if the borrower fails to repay it, I can at least go back and repossess the car. If Representative Guerra takes out a college loan and fails to pay it back, I can't go back and collect Representative Guerra's brain, I guess. Nor would Representative Guerra like me to do that. There's nothing that the lender can go back and reclaim, and that's why the interest rate is higher. And I think I'll stop there.
Any other comment, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would request that you ask Diane Behrens to prepare us a graph on that and find out what our default rates are currently and whether she thinks that this would lower the default rate or whether it would increase the default rate. I'd also like to, for the next committee, get a little more discussion. We'll have a fiscal note, but in that fiscal note, hopefully we'll look at whether they view the 3% reduction for people that come back to Alaska, whether that would make the commission unprofitable, and so that they'd have to increase. You know, we wouldn't want to have a thing so that we would increase the rates to compensate for, I mean, the interest rates to compensate for the reduction. So I just want to get that on the record as whether the commission would anticipate anything like that having to go forward. So thanks.
Okay.
Representative
Wilson.
Thank you. I have a question for the sponsor. You have references here to 6 other statutes, and when you come back next time, can you tell us what those are so we know what that's referring to?
Sure, I can. And just in response to Representative Seaton's question, the reason why this won't cause the Student Loan Corporation to raise rates on other students is the Student Loan Corporation isn't paying for the discount out of their own assets. It's subject to legislative appropriation. So Diane Behrens, I'm sure, will confirm that, but it won't result in the raising of rates of other students. But, yeah, we will come back with the references to the other statutes.
Representative Wolfen.
Just one more question. So on page 2, at the end of line 6 and then following up with the first part of line 7, the reduction of that principal is subject to appropriation by the legislature. So I would like to know whether they have to be back and have to apply, and then once they get the application, do we get the legislature get a report of how many there are so that we would know how much to appropriate? And so at that time, after they've gone through all this and are hoping that we'll do it, they find out that we will or we didn't.
Through the chair, I think the answer is that's how we already do it with the WAMI program. It's how we already do it with the teacher loan forgiveness program for teachers that go back to rural Alaska. They know how much it's going to cost, and if they estimate wrong, then there's a supplemental. But the legislature has never not funded those programs. Those programs have always been funded. My anticipation is if the legislature decides we're going to do this, the legislature will fund it. It's been our history. We've funded these programs once we've adopted them. I don't think there's been a case where we haven't funded any of the other loan forgiveness programs.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead. Who's online?
Diane.
Diane, is that Diane Behrens?
Diane Behrens.
Go ahead, Diane.
I just wanted to make a clarifying point. Unlike the teacher education loan or the WAMI program, the WAMI program is front-loaded. So it's actually funded by general fund appropriations to support the cost of the WAMI program. With that program, because the funds are all provided when the students begin to participate in it, the only time there would be, essentially what we don't do is collect money back from them if they practice in the state. So the structure is very different than what is being proposed here with respect to WAMI. As it is for teacher education loans, the teacher education loan program is a very small program. It is not supported by general funds. There are no appropriations associated with it. It existed and was disclosed in bond documents when the corporation originally began issuing bonds and is funded by the Student Loan Corporation. But because it is such a small program, with fewer than 90 students a year, and it has a relatively low success rate, if you will, in terms of the number of students who actually complete the teaching degrees and are in qualifying schools, that the cost which the corporation absorbs is fairly de minimis. So I want the record to be clear that this is a very different approach that would require annual appropriations based on the number of borrowers who are otherwise eligible.
Thank you, Diane. Okay, we do need to skedaddle. In case I omitted saying this, yes, for HB 272 version R was adopted. Yes, I admitted that. We will not be meeting March 7 or 9, where you'll receive notice of next meeting and business to be taken up on March 12 soon. And with no further business, we're adjourned at 10:05.